Hurry into Menards right now and save big money. Miracle-Gro raised bed soil helps you grow bigger, more bountiful plants. It provides the right foundation your plants need to thrive with a 100% organic formula that requires no mixing. Add Miracle-Gro raised bed soil to help your plants grow with organic nutrients you can count on. Visit our garden center or check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening now. Save big money
at Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And it's that time of the week. We go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and bring in our good friend Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports. Charles, what's going on, man? How you doing?
Yeah, Joe asking me what topics I want to talk about. Like, I don't want to talk about Vrabel lighting him up.
Yes. Oh, we've been talking about it all morning. Vrabel wants to kill Rex Road, and it's awesome.
I'm sorry. I'm trying to steer you away. Come on. How about Alvin Kamara? Good year, eh?
Charles, how afraid of Vrabel should Joe be right now?
I mean, on the scale of coaches who I've seen, like, take Joe into a hallway and yell at him, the last guy I saw was like a little 5'8 Italian dude. Tom Izzo doesn't exactly stand up to Mike Vrabel. I've seen, okay.
A few times. That's happened a few times. He screamed at you too now. Let's.
Yeah, well, okay, so historically I've seen Tom Izzo pissed at Joe. I've seen Nick Saban pissed at Joe. Nick Saban is probably a little more intense. That's probably getting closer to Vrabel, but yeah, that's probably one of the few guys that honestly in the NFL. I've gotten lit up by Tomlin. That wasn't great. That was not a great thing.
Yeah, see, I think that's the top two guys if we had like a death match of NFL coaches. Yeah.
Yeah. Tomlin got me really good. Like Tomlin lit me up so hard it made SportsCenter. Like nobody knew it was me.
How'd I miss this?
During a press conference.
When was this?
This was a long time ago. This was his second year as head coach.
Oh, wow.
I made the mistake of asking his players if he was a better coach in year two versus year one. Not necessarily a question that coaches enjoy you asking his veteran players, but he went off and asked me if my editor ever asked me if I'm a better reporter in year two after year one.
Ooh, I like it.
It made a SportsCenter lead in, and I'm like, oh, that's awesome. I really appreciate really appreciate this. So, yeah, so what? Okay, so, Joe, what happened? I want to hear this. I want to know exactly what you did wrong.
So have you heard the audio or anything?
See, I didn't know it was you. I didn't know that was you that triggered this.
Well,
so, I mean,
I don't totally know. I think some of it is like they're winning and he's irritable. But long story short, they had a fake field goal for Brett Kern last year that almost got him killed. I mean, honestly, Devin White just about ended his career, and it was a terrible call. And so there was a very snarky column that followed that. And we've made a lot of jokes about double reverses with Brett Kern here, and I've made some other references to that in writing. So I asked him about like a play in the game the other day on Zoom, and he's like, "Yeah, well, we were going to do a double reverse to Kern." Like, what? Where is this coming from? So for whatever reason, that was the time to fire back. Like I said, if Vrabel wins the Super Bowl, the press conference will be Vrabel throwing up double middles and taking no questions.
Probably. Yeah.
So some of it is Vrabel has got to be like exhibit A of a player who every edge you can get psychologically, right? And that means holding on to grudges sometimes, I assume. So I think it's a little bit of that. Also, you know.
Yeah, I mean, these guys, they read. I mean, you know, a lot of people think, well, they say they don't read things or there aren't things that, you know, get under their skin. And then like 3 years later, something gets brought up. So, yeah, that's not a huge surprise. I mean, he got kind of bent about Derrick Henry's load management too, didn't he? I mean,
yes, Teron Davenport asked him a simple question and yeah. So it was an irritable day yesterday.
Yes, it was.
In general.
Yeah.
But some people can irritate more than others.
Right, right. Well, and I, the Derrick Henry thing too, I was like, man, it's a fair question. I mean, that's a normal, like, run-of-the-mill sort of, you know, thing that you ask during the course. I'm telling you, I think he functions on I think he feels like he's probably in a better zone when he's irritable and chippy and, you know, feeling. I think probably a lot of coaches feel that way, you know, like some guys just operate on having a little bit of an edge, you know, and it's all the good guys are, I'm telling you, I swear to God, like I've seen Pete Carroll enough that like, if he's not chewing 67 pieces of gum and looking like he's like had 48 Red Bulls, he's not on the top of his game. He has to be talking a mile a minute. And it's, they all have these kind of quirks. I mean, you know, Tomlin's another guy where it's like, you're always skating on the edge of like, is he happy right now? Or is he really pissed? Like, is he, like, where are we here? And that's kind of his zone. He likes guys not exactly feeling comfortable.
Well, here's a question as someone who covers the league, because I talk about this quite a bit here. I feel like this is a very, I don't know if friendly is the right word, but it's a pretty gentle press corps here, I'd say in general, and right. Maybe sometimes to our detriment, you know? Where would you, in terms of NFL, you know, press corps, and I know it's not like you study everything, but you have a feel for this. Where would you put Nashville in the NFL in terms of, whatever word you want to use, toughness of press corps, hardness of press corps, nastiness of press corps?
I mean, I'd say it's middle of the road. I, you know, I'd say it's somewhere in the middle. I wouldn't say it's soft, you know. I don't think it's soft.
Thank you, Charles.
Questions that need to get asked, get asked. Like, I think that's why. And, you know, like you said, I reporters clearly aren't afraid to throw out some snarky remarks or, you know, have some general criticisms. Like, it's, you know, I think it's middle, like, I think it's middle of the road. I don't think that's a bad thing. I tend to think like the middle of the road ones are the fair, you know, they're fair groups, but it's not, I mean, if you saw what happened with the Jets on Sunday, I mean, they basically called Adam Gase a liar in the middle of the Zoom press conference. Whereas, you know, you have some markets where they'll just straight up shell a coach. And when it's going the wrong direction, man, it'll get really nasty. And I don't think that's necessarily a good thing either, but I'm in Houston, and I can just tell you that Bill O'Brien for a lot of years thought that he had it tough here, and I disagree. I think Bill O'Brien's, you know, for a number of years got a free pass on a lot of things when there was a lot of messed up stuff going on behind the scenes inside the Texans. And to me, I think, you know, Houston, I think, is on the lower end of the scale. I think that there's, you know, probably not people that go after, were going after Bill O'Brien as much as maybe he deserved it at times. And, but yeah, I think Nashville's kind of right in that medium area. And I don't think that's a bad thing. I know a lot of, everybody can't be Philly. Okay. Everybody can't be the New York market. Everybody can't be, you know, Chicago can get pretty nasty when things go south. I mean, and I don't always think that's a good thing. I really don't. I think that sometimes you get situations where people start to pile on, and if you even try to be fair, sometimes in those markets you get tagged as being, you know, somebody who's soft or, you know, carrying water or things like that. And I don't think there are circumstances with bad teams that sometimes you just got to be fair about it. But I don't think Mike should be. I don't think he should feel like his press, you know, the press is on the line in Nashville. I think you guys are pretty fair.
I will say on Houston, though, some John McClain tweets during the Texans loss, that's some good stuff.
Yeah, well, okay. I mean, what's going on, particularly now? I mean, what's going on now? I mean, at this point where it's one of those things. I remember working in Detroit after getting out of college and recognizing, so there's a fairly famous columnist in the Detroit market who never wrote a bad thing about anybody until it was clear they were gone. And then it was like he would load up. Mitch Albom. I'll say it. I don't even care at this point. I always felt like Mitch Albom was the nicest guy in the world and wrote the softest, you know, rosiest stuff. And then once the guy was out the door, all of a sudden Mitch had some cutting words. And I'm like, yeah, well, why don't you say that when the dude's in the middle of his tenure? So I don't, you know, he's got a lot more money and fame than I do. So whatever, I guess I'll punch up today.
Who knew that we'd rip so many people today, Charles? And we're still not done.
That's right. Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. All right, Charles, we've been talking a lot about Derrick Henry today, obviously having an incredible year, just destroyed the Colts on Sunday, and talking about the idea of maybe him getting in the MVP conversation. As you evaluate that conversation, what do you think it would take for a running back in today's day and age to really legitimately have a chance to win an MVP award?
Sure. I'll preface this by saying I do have an MVP vote, so it's, you know, definitely something that I'm thinking about. It is a really difficult era to win MVP as a running back, because it's obviously the way the game is set up, passing stats are so inflated. And I know a lot of fans are like, well, because they're so inflated, you should, it's so much harder to do it as a running back. And I don't necessarily disagree with that, which is why I think that realistically Derrick Henry should be in this conversation. I know a lot of people are saying, well, if he breaks the 2000 yard plateau, that's when you really got to look at this guy and say he's an MVP. I don't even think he has to break the 2000 yard plateau. I think if that offense, if they're able to go on a tear the backstretch, the remainder of the schedule, and he's able to do essentially what he did this weekend, and you see him just dominating teams and really dragging defenses, knowing how difficult it is in this era where running backs are going to not really stack up that kind of a load, you know, and we'll see if load management does come into play with him. I suspect it probably will. I think he's in that conversation. The problem that he has is Pat Mahomes is on like another planet right now. And he's on another planet to the point where I think MVP voters, you don't even really talk about him the first half of a season now, regardless of the numbers that he puts up. But, you know, Pat Mahomes, he could crack 5,000 yards, have 44 touchdown passes, and only throw three or four picks by the end of the season. That's insanity. Like, even in this era of passing stats, it's insanity. And then when you watch Kansas City Chiefs games, I talked about this last week with you guys, like, he just wins games. Like, you can't give, if they could be trailing, and they've had a lot of close games this year, if they're trailing and there's a couple minutes left, it's almost a foregone conclusion. Like, they're probably not going to be able to stop this guy. Like, and not just because the weapons he has around him, the way he can manipulate defenses now, he's just on a whole other level. So unfortunately for Derrick Henry and pretty much everybody else, I think the next 10 years, it's going to be hard to, unless Pat Mahomes suffers some injuries or that the salary cap strips out, you know, a lot of the pieces around him, he's going to be one of those guys where every year, maybe at some point it gets to a detriment where it's like, well, we just can't work to Pat every year. It's like Michael Jordan in his prime. Can't give it to Michael Jordan every year. I think Derek's, that's the problem, is that he's running into a guy who's just beyond. And by the way, Aaron Rodgers had an unbelievable year too. And I know Packers fans are upset that he's not, why isn't Aaron Rodgers, you know, a front runner at this point. I think right now between Pat, Aaron Rodgers, and Derrick Henry, to me, those are the three guys where when you end up making your calls to teams that have either had them as common opponents or guys who have looked at film on all these guys, you start to say, parse it out for me. Like, who's the better player here, and explain to me why he's an MVP. I went through this last year on a far lesser scale with like Kyler Murray and Josh Jacobs. I had to call, because the offensive rookie of the year race was so close, I had to call a number of teams and just say, you prep for these guys. Tell me the difference, like, in your preparation, and why do you think you'd sort of give the nod over one guy versus the other? So Derrick Henry, I think right now at this pace, is going to make it that kind of a conversation where you got to lean on some teams and ask them, what's the difference between these two guys?
Well, see, that's why I'm going to disagree with you, Charles, and you unwittingly ripped me there, because I've been talking all day about 2,000 yards. I think Derek would need something like that. I think he would need the eye-popping number along with them basically winning out, and probably like Mahomes having another Raiders game one or two. Mm-hmm. But don't you know what I mean? Like, I just feel like voters would
yeah.
That's something okay. That would maybe take someone's eyes off Mahomes.
I want to agree with you in the sense of, like, what will draw votes. Yeah, absolutely. I think that 2,000-yard plateau instantaneously changes the tone of the conversation, because it's a level of special that is not reached. You know, you just don't see it. You know, O.J. Simpson, Barry Sanders, Terrell Davis. I mean, it's just you don't see that 2,000-yard mark breached. And so when it is, it completely changes sort of the tone of the conversation. And, oh, by the way, we're in an era where that should be less attainable really than any other time because you just don't have offenses that are running back dominated offenses. So I agree in terms of just automatically attracting votes and really putting him in a position to win an MVP if they have a run and he breaks that mark. I don't think there's any question. Then I think that I think the odds kind of tilt into his favor. So I would agree with you on that. But what I was saying is I don't necessarily think it should have to get to that point for him to be a realistic part of the argument. Like some people are just going to say, well, hey, he's got to hit that 2,000 just to be part of the argument. I disagree. I think that, you know, getting close should put him in that territory. One thing I'll bring up, and this will probably kind of give fans the perspective of where this is going. Calvin Johnson, remember when he approached that 2,000-yard mark receiving, which had never been done. No one ever breached it. And it was sort of like if he breaches 2,000 yards receiving, he's got to get some MVP votes regardless of the performance of the team, yada, yada, yada. He didn't. And he was never a factor. And it was, you know, in terms of the MVP race, you know, like I think offensive player of the year, you start to sort of, it becomes the second prize. It's sort of like, well, if it's not the MVP, then is he the front runner for offensive player of the year? I think you watch, he doesn't win the MVP. I'll bet he wins. Depending on how this finishes out, I think he's got probably a really, really strong chance to be the offensive player of the year.
Well, you brought up the Lions real fast, Charles. Matt Patricia, viability as a D coordinator moving forward, is this someone the Titans should look at?
I don't know. I mean, I'm just saying, I mean, it depends on Vrabel's level of comfort with him and how he feels like he can function with him because I think with Matt, you know, I think now we've entered the territory with Matt where it was like sort of like Marty Morningweg when he got fired from Detroit. He was a terrible head coach, but he was an okay coordinator. Like he was a pretty decent coordinator working with the right people. We'll see if Matt can answer that question because now I really truly do believe people are looking at Matt Patricia and going, man, if you go and watch their defensive performances this year, a lot of people are sort of like, I don't know, man, maybe Bill was calling more of that and scheming more of that when Matt was there than we really thought. So his rep's pretty banged up, and not just as a head coach. I think even as a defensive play caller and schemer, it's a little beat up right now. But if Vrabel thinks he can work well with him and Matt falls into that category of a really good coordinator and not a coach, then great, awesome. But that's all on Mike and Mike's comfort level and functionality.
Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports has been our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. Charles, great stuff, man, and we'll talk to you next week. Hopefully Rex Road survives Vrabel and he's able to be a part of that conversation.
That's right. Stop talking about double reverses.
That's right.
Absolutely. Trouble. This is when it's great that everything's on Zoom.
That's right. Thanks, Charles. We appreciate you, man.
Thanks, Charles.
When we come back, we'll dive into the rest of the league. A big weekend in the NFL, including, they were going to get this Steelers and Ravens game played. We'll discuss that on the other side of the break. This is Robbie and Rex Road on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Tuesday morning. And Joe, it seems like the NFL is finally going to get in the Ravens and the Steelers game scheduled now for tomorrow at 2:40 here locally. Now, remember, they were scheduled to play on Thanksgiving night. That game got moved to Sunday originally, then was moved until Tuesday, now being played on Wednesday at 2:40, and the NFL has had to shift so many different things around. The Ravens-Cowboys was supposed to take place on Thursday. It's now moved to next Tuesday. Washington was supposed to play Pittsburgh on Sunday. It's now been moved to Monday. So a lot of moving parts here, but it seems like the Ravens and the Steelers will finally get played tomorrow, and Lamar Jackson will not be a part of that game. Robert Griffin III scheduled to be the starting quarterback for the Ravens. This has been a big mess for the NFL to try to get this game in and get it played. And if we've learned anything so far, they're not canceling any of these games. They're going to move everything around. They've got to move around just to make sure they get it in, regardless of how much it screws up the next week and their schedule.
It's almost like we're in a pandemic.
Yeah.
Wasn't that supposed to end? Wasn't the pandemic supposed to end?
It's still here.
November?
It's still here.
I tell you what, I'm here for some 240, you said? 240 tomorrow?
240.
I mean, this is like NFL getting in on Maction's territory. But you're right. I mean, it's like, hey, we got a whole week to use, and we'll use this week however we feel, however we feel fit to use it. So I'll be watching that game tomorrow.
A little Wednesday afternoon football.
I hope that I am back in time from Titans practice. And I hope Vrabel waves at me at practice, but that's a different matter.
I hope all he does is wave at you. He doesn't come try to hit you at practice. That'd be great.
Social distancing.
Absolutely. A lot of Broncos fans upset that the NFL has moved this Ravens game around so much. Of course, the Broncos over the weekend, it came out like literally 12 hours before their game that all of their quarterbacks were ineligible to play. They had some COVID-19 contact tracing issues in their quarterback room, not wearing masks, not socially distancing. So the Broncos trotted out against the Saints on Sunday without a quarterback to play the game. And it went about as well as you think it would go. 31-3 winners for the Saints. They were inept offensively, the Broncos were. And I think, what did they finish with, one completion in that game? Hinton came in and completed one pass. 1 of 9, 13 yards, 2 interceptions in that game. And a lot of Broncos fans are upset saying, all right, you've moved this Ravens game around. They've had an outbreak. Why didn't you postpone the Broncos and the Steelers and the Saints game?
Right, because the Broncos are irrelevant, essentially.
Yeah, pretty much.
And I haven't followed this too closely, but apparently Drew Locke's mom now is out on social media.
She's out on social media.
Defending her son.
Yeah.
Like, people saying this or that, and it's kind of a mess over there.
Huh? Well, it also, like, it didn't mean a whole lot when the coach, Vic Fangio, from the Broncos, has come out and said, yeah, we thought those guys were supposed to be leaders, and they did not handle themselves in the right way and didn't wear their mask and didn't socially distance. So, and when the coach comes out and say that and, like, throws his own players under the bus, you don't see that happen very often.
Didn't he also say COVID's fake? Or am I
Fangio?
Am I getting that mixed up?
I don't remember that one.
Well, Drew Locke's mom said that he does not have it. She's like, well, for the record,
right,
he's not positive.
Well, I don't think any of them are positive. I think it's all contact tracing.
I thought one was.
One was, but like the other three that couldn't play, I don't think are positive.
Because of contact tracing.
Right.
Right. Well, man. And so now we also, by the way, we have a draft pick for the Saints.
Seventh round.
It's amazing. All these teams other than the Titans getting popped for the draft picks.
Like, are the Ravens, are they going to get hit with the draft pick?
I don't.
Because the way the NFL has operated has
that
been.
That guy should be punished. I mean, that
the strength coach
has got to be seriously punished.
Well, the way the NFL has operated so far has basically been, all right, let's find a way through this. Let's navigate through this and figure out a way to get the game played. And once we do that, we'll look into everything and figure out why things went wrong and why there was an outbreak there. So, I mean, a draft pick could be on the table for the Ravens just because of the strength coach.
I mean, listen, it's an interesting situation because it feels like with the other two, it was a little bit more like just an overall general lax behavior. This is one guy basically going rogue, but how do you not punish them for that? I would think that they would be at the top of the list of teams that should be punished because it's demonstrated individual, you know, like
defiance.
Shirking the whole defying the whole thing and punished by the team. Now I think the Ravens would say we punished the guy ourselves. This is kind of like NCAA investigations. Auburn stinks this year in basketball. Yo, we're gonna do a postseason ban. Please don't hammer us for all of our cheating.
Yeah, but if you're the NFL, like, I don't think you can really view it that way. Like, if you've got these protocols in place for a reason, they've got to be followed. And if they're not, regardless of whether it was just one guy like willfully not doing it and it wasn't like from the organization down, eventually that comes back to John Harbaugh and they're like, look, dude, you're in charge of this team. It's your job, part of it this year, to get everybody on board. That's what people were talking about with Vrabel when the Titans were going through this thing. So I'm not sure the NFL is going to give them a whole lot of leeway there in their investigation.
Let me give a little credit to Vrabel and the Titans, by the way, because I love to do that. The Ravens have not spoken a word this entire time. They're, you know, Jeff Srebeck, who we've had on the show, we were slacking yesterday because he was asking, like, did the Titans talk during their whole thing? Like, yeah, actually, Vrabel did a couple times. John Robinson talked. He's like, not a peep. So the first time they talk will be after this game tomorrow, unless something changes today, which is stupid because that's all anybody's going to talk about.
Right.
Now, because they haven't had a chance to address this stuff already.
Like, regardless of how the game goes, like, it's probably very unlikely that RG3 is going to come out there and lead the Ravens to some victory, but even if he does, like, all the questions after the game are going to be about, so, how'd this happen? What are you going to do? What's the investigation looking like?
Right, which all you could have knocked all that out already.
Very interesting time in the NFL. And as we've seen, they're going to do everything they can possibly do to make sure all of these games happen. We talked about maybe having, you know, what happens if one team has 14 games or one team has 15 games. It doesn't look like the NFL is going to allow that to happen.
It's amazing, really, especially when we look back on the Titans 2 weeks where it was just going crazy. It's amazing. We're at December 1st now, and they're still managing somehow to hang on to this, get every game in. It's impressive in a way, and it's also a little bit ridiculous in some of these cases, but I'm very surprised.
When we come back, is Ryan Tannehill having the greatest season for a Titans quarterback of all time, and could he be getting some more help on the way? We'll discuss that on the other side. This is Robbie and Rex Road on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Talking some Titans, let's revisit our poll question of the day at 102.5 The Game on Twitter. Assuming Patrick Mahomes is the unanimous number one candidate for NFL MVP, who would be your second place vote? The options are Derrick Henry, Aaron Rodgers, Russell Wilson, or other that you can list in the responses. So far, Derrick Henry, with 400 votes in, getting 70% of the vote. Aaron Rodgers at number two at 16%. Russell Wilson at 3 with 11%, and then 3% say other. And then you go down to some of the responses. Jared on Twitter says, Rodgers at number 1, Derrick Henry at number 2. What do you think about that?
Jared?
Yeah, not that Jared.
Okay. Rodgers 1, Henry 2, no Mahomes. See? Just a dismiss. Like Charles was saying, there will be years like that, I think, with Mahomes. The LeBron years, the Jordan years.
I don't know if we've gotten there yet.
But this is not that year. No. Not right now. He's number one.
Joe, we talked earlier in the show about Ryan Tannehill. And I think, you know, we've talked a lot about Henry in today's show, and deservedly so, and where he fits in the MVP discussion. But Tannehill having just a wonderful year, and he had a down spurt after, you know, Lawan went out with injury and the offense didn't look the same. But even still, I mean, he's on pace from a numbers perspective, which I know doesn't tell the entire story, but just purely from a numbers perspective, to have the greatest season a Titans quarterback has ever had. And there's, you know, different ways you can kind of evaluate that. And I think back to Steve McNair's MVP season, or co-MVP season, that he had in 2003 alongside Peyton Manning. And the numbers, I mean, they were okay for McNair in that season. You got to remember, it was a different era during that time as well. So you look back at his 03 season, he finished with 24 touchdowns, 3,200 yards, 62.5% completion percentage, and 7 interceptions. So, good numbers. I mean, he only played in 14 games that year due to injury, which I think kind of proves how good he was that year, that he was still able to put up those numbers. But Tannehill, so far, he's already got 23 touchdowns, only 4 interceptions, 2,600 yards, almost 8 yards an attempt, 65% of his balls being completed. I mean, he's on pace to blow McNair's numbers out of the water in terms of what the final tally looks like. Now, it's a different league, it's a different time, but is this unquestionably the best season we've ever seen from a Titans quarterback?
Yeah, it's just how you want to still answering that question is how you want to judge it, because McNair, like you said, he didn't play in 2 games. How many games did he play that year where he was banged up badly?
Yeah.
And still performed. Wasn't that a lot of why he got those votes?
Yeah.
I mean, thinking back, like, Manning was stats guy and obviously great player, but that was a grit winner.
Yeah, like McNair is the toughest quarterback I've ever seen. Like the things he was able to play through, and just the stories you heard about Steve McNair, I'm not sure anybody's ever been quite like that. I mean, we've had quarterbacks play through a lot of things. Like Brett Favre played through a lot. But McNair, I mean, that guy was on a different level.
Got to bring up another Packers quarterback, huh?
Well, he played through a lot.
No, I mean, no, he did. And I think that's the hard part, is that's why he won the MVP, because it wasn't just gaudy numbers. It wasn't gaudy numbers. Although for that time, like 3,200, 24-7 in 14 games, Those are very good numbers for that time.
Yeah.
For this time, well, we got Mahomes. How many 5,000-yard seasons is Mahomes going to end up with? I bet you he's got a few. You know, it's just so different. So if you do that, like the inflation, like you can do with you know, salaries from back then to now and say, what does that really mean now? You could do it the other way and say, okay, Tannehill's numbers in that context, are they that much better than McNair's? And that's why it's hard to even though you don't think of it as quote unquote different era, it is a different era, and it's hard to compare. But I think Tannehill, if he stays on this pace, I don't think there's any question it will be the most prolific quarterback season in Titans history. I mean that's not an opinion; it will be true. It'll be fact. Best is very subjective.
Let's go back to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Ty text in. Says, give me McNair's rushing yards from that year. Well, I think you'll be surprised to know McNair in that year had 138 rushing yards, 4 touchdowns. Ryan Tannehill's got 152 and 2 touchdowns running. So that was kind of the point in McNair's career where they started to move away from him running a little bit. Like 98, McNair had 550 yards rushing. 99, he had 337 and 2,403. 2003, the year he won the MVP, was when that started to really trend downward. He had 138 that year and never had more than 139 in any other year after that.
And that was injury-related too, right? I mean, you just can't take hits, unnecessary hits anymore.
Right, like when he won the MVP, he was 30 years old. So once you get to 30, I mean, you're starting to go the other way in terms of your mobility. Now, I say that, Tannehill's, what, 32? Still running around pretty well.
And Tannehill, also, not to the same level, but I think he's demonstrated a lot of toughness.
Yeah.
In his
sometimes
time.
A little too much.
Yeah.
Slide.
Sometimes, yeah, he doesn't go for the slide when he should go for the slide, but he's been a much better athlete than I thought he was, you know, for one thing, and also very fearless.
He slid on Sunday. He slid right into second base.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was a play, Joe. I see your wheels turning.
Yep.
Ryan Tannehill did slide, because I told the buddy that I was watching the game with, hey, he figured out how to slide.
I don't remember it.
I don't remember that either.
They were going left to right on your TV.
Oh, looking forth.
Was it early in the game?
If they were going left to right, then it was probably the second quarter.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's progress, man. We've been waiting on him to do that all year.
That was an interesting Sunday of Vanderbilt and Titans going on at once, but good for him. I mean, how many times has he slid? He slid a few times.
It's not very often.
Not a ton. Not a ton. He usually opts for – obviously, you start that slide, and you that's where they put you down.
Yeah.
There's a big difference. You can have a 4 or 5 yard difference in not sliding, but still.
Also have slide. A broken collarbone.
Exactly. Yeah.
So there's a guy out there right now, Kenny Stills. Played for the Houston Texans this year. He passed through waivers yesterday. He's got 11 catches on the year. And obviously, we've seen Kenny Stills here before. He did a lot of damage against the Titans last year for the Texans. Out there right now, and you look at the Titans roster, and we've talked about their top three guys, and A.J. Brown, Corey Davis, Adam Humphries, hadn't been together a whole lot this year. I think 3 games is technically the number, but it's really been like 2 full games that they've been together. Should the Titans entertain the idea of maybe going out and sign a guy in Kenny Stills that's been productive in his career, but 11 receptions this year, 144 yards, 1 touchdown? How much interest do you think should be there from the Titans and Kenny Stills?
I mean, I do wonder, and I just don't know, if he's diminishing a certain amount now. He's only 28, but, I mean, just last year, we saw Kenny Stills running wild in Nissan Stadium on Logan Ryan, so he looked pretty good then. Is he banged up? Is he fading a little bit as a player? I think that's a key question. I think the fact that he has a relationship with Tannehill and is a guy who could certainly give you better depth, I think he's worth a look, worth a conversation. You said it earlier, and I agree. I would also be surprised if the Titans really get serious about this. I think that Cam Batson, I think, has done a really nice job. He's kind of leapfrogged Khalif Raymond. That's your 4 and 5. And I think they're in good shape. Now, will they ever get the top three together healthy for a stretch? They haven't had it this year. The next game they all play together will be their third, which includes the opener when 2 of them were hurt. So they obviously have needed depth, so you can say, why not bolster the depth? But I think even like Nick Westbrook is there as the 6 and can do something for you.
And it's interesting, like you brought up Khalif Raymond, and it's interesting to watch what his numbers have looked like since LaJuan went out. And I think there's a direct correlation to that because Raymond has been traditionally like the deep guy, like the deep threat guy. And with just the amount of time that they've had a lot of these games to throw the ball, you don't have time to sit back and wait for him to run 45 yards and throw it deep. And it's interesting, you know, before LaJuan got hurt, Raymond had 3 catches for 118 against Minnesota, 2 catches for 26 against Buffalo, and 3 catches for 32 against Houston. Since LaJuan went down that Pittsburgh game, he's got 1 catch for 11 yards, and he's got a total of 2 targets since then.
That's a great point. And there's you can't say there's not a correlation there. He did drop one the other day, I believe, right?
Yeah.
So, but, yeah, I think you're right. There's a correlation. Also interesting on Raymond is, and I didn't notice it this at the time until I went back and watched the All-22 coaches film of that game. I mean, he was one of the key blockers of the Derrick Henry winning touchdown in overtime, which is a nice little personnel curveball, right? When you throw – when you got Khalif Raymond out there, I mean, it's not like the whole defense is like, uh-oh, Khalif Raymond's on the field. But still, like, do you expect him to be the blocking receiver on a run play?
Probably not.
He, yeah, tell you what, he and Firkser, two guys who are not on this team for blocking, really, both got key blocks on that touchdown.
Yeah, it's just interesting. I mean – if you add Kenny Stills to the mix and he comes in and he's your number four, number one, I mean, you still got Raymond in the return game, which I think he's done fine in the return game. Like, there hasn't been a disastrous play recently. I don't think he's been particularly dangerous, but he's been fine. But what, like, do you carry six at that point? Do you leave Batson on the field? Raymond's still your returner and you're carrying 6 wide receivers if you bring in Kenny Stills? I mean, that would be a question they'd have to answer, especially with – like outside linebacker, then basically playing 2 or 3 guys all season long.
I mean, they'd Batson would probably be the odd man out.
Probably would.
You know, it's probably what would happen.
And he's been pretty good lately.
He has been. He has been. He's again, Batson is a guy who, before that injury in the 2019 training camp, he was, I think, going to have a role on that team, and that opened the door for Raymond to step in, and he jumped all over it. But Batson has kind of gone back past him, and he's – A nice player, really. He does the job when they ask him to do something.
Bottom line, I don't think Kenny Stills is going to be here. But it is an intriguing option, especially with the history of Tannehill.
Yeah,
I don't think the Titans go that route.
I don't either. I think it's – I don't know if it's like you add players and players come and go in a season. So I wouldn't want to say it's like disrupting chemistry. But they have a good thing going. And you could have better depth. But listen, if I'm Stills, am I interested in this situation? There's other places where you are going to be in the top three for sure right now, right?
You're 4 at best coming here to the Titans.
Yeah.
When everybody's healthy.
It's a nice thing to talk about, though.
Yeah, sure.
Good job.
When we come back, is the NHL season in jeopardy before it even begins? We'll discuss that on the other side. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Final segment of the day here on Robbie and Rex Road, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth taking you through this Tuesday morning here in Nashville, Tennessee. And Joe, we've been waiting and waiting for some news on the NHL front. We had Philip Forsberg of the Predators join us last week on the show. The team is in town. A lot of players are already here and skating, just kind of waiting and anticipating the start of training camp. The NHL has thrown out the target start date of January 1st, but there hasn't been a whole lot of positive momentum on that front as of late. And late last night, Kevin McGran of the Toronto Star came out with a story, and the title of the story is "The NHL Talks, or Lack Thereof, Have the Familiar Feel of a Lockout." And NHL fans, if you follow the sport for any length of time over the course of the past 2 decades, you are very familiar with what a lockout looks like. They've had 2 of them Since the millennium turned to the 2000s, one of them was for an entire season back in 2004-05. One of them was for basically half the season in 2012 and 2013. And the talks are kind of at a standstill right now between the NHL and the NHLPA. And basically what's happened was before they had the return to play back in the bubbles in Edmonton and Toronto, the NHL and the NHLPA came up with an agreement with the new CBA, and that was supposed to be that. They were supposed to move forward from there, and I don't even think there was really much of a heavy involvement. It was basically Bettman and Donald Fehr who were kind of the talking heads for both sides, and they got the deal done relatively easily and relatively smoothly. And what's transpired since then is leading a lot to wonder if maybe the NHL, their season is in jeopardy. And basically what's going on right now, the NHL is trying to get the players to take even more of a pay cut heading into this year. The players were originally supposed to be given 72% of their salary that they're owed heading into this year. And a new referendum has come down that maybe could drop that number to as low as 55%, and maybe even as low as 32% if some salary structures end up going a different way that Bettman has tossed out there. Again, this all coming from Kevin McGran from the Toronto Star. Some concerning news if you're an NHL fan about what the start of this season could look like.
Yeah, it's an interesting piece. And to go to the very end of it, it's a good, you know, it's a very detailed piece. To go to the very end of it, it's a mess, in the words of Kevin. And really his conclusion is that when it comes down to it, Bettman probably has the hammer here, right?
I mean,
ultimately, it's the players probably bend to this, and whatever that looks like timing-wise, I don't know, but that's the most likely outcome. But as you just pointed out there, it's not a great situation, and a lot of people are unhappy. And I just think a lot of this is just like so many other things in the world right now. It's the pandemic has done a lot of damage.
Sure.
You know? But how do you resolve that between two sides? It's not always easy.
And a lot of owners reportedly are fearful that, you know, playing a season right now with no fans in the building, I mean, that could end up hurting them more than just not playing at all. Matter of fact, reportedly, a few have said we'd be better off just not playing and taking the loss rather than playing with no fans in the stands, which is not what any NHL fan wants to hear. And quite frankly, like, if you're the league, as much as that may be true, like, you can't just keep doing this. Like, you can't go through, you know, every 5, 6, 7, 8 years where you don't play. Like, that, you can't continue to build your league doing it that way. But I understand from the owner's point of view that if that's the case and you're going to lose that much money, maybe it is tempting to not have this season.
Well, listen, first of all, I agree what you just said. You can't do it. You cannot do that. I mean, I know some. I mean, sure, there's an owner out there who's like, you know what? Why can't we just get to another big bubble and let everybody be in the tournament and at least have that? But you got to have some kind of a season. I do think that the idea of all things should be on the table in terms of mini bubbles and whatever, reduce six schedules. If you're not going to have fans, it's going to be a drain. There's no doubt. But all that stuff should be on the table to get something in. And understand that those things you're talking about are labor lockouts,
right?
And those were damaging, harmful. This is about the pandemic, right? I mean,
yeah.
Ultimately, that's what this is about. So whatever you can come up with, there's got to be compromise, but I really feel strongly that you have to play some kind of a regular season.
You do, and if you read this piece on the Toronto Star by Kevin McGran, like, it paints a pretty dire picture of what the situation is like and what it looks like right now with the NHL. I had some conversations last night that paint a little bit different of a picture. I think the mood is a little bit more optimistic than what McGran has thrown out there. And I think the players, I mean, they feel like a deal eventually is going to get done and they're going to play in training camp. Now, it may not be January 1st, although I was told January 1st is not off the table. Like, that could absolutely happen still and they could have a training camp. But you also got to realize, like, COVID plays a part in this as well. The virus is ramping up, and you've got to factor in the holidays. The players don't want to go through training camp right now, go through the holidays, and then come back and start playing. So this could be a situation where maybe you start in mid-January or even the first part of February and play a shortened season and get to the end of June.
I mean, it feels that way, right?
Yeah.
Like, a delay may be coming here. Although, Kevin McGran, so you're saying maybe a bit of a Debbie Downer on this whole thing.
Maybe a little bit.
Doom and gloomer?
I hope he's right.
Yes.
A little bit of a doom and gloomer.
Not a sunshine blower.
No. You talked to some sunshine blowers.
I talked to some sunshine blowers.
It's good to have a balance of the two.
I'm glad. I'm full of sunshine blowers. I like the world of sunshine blowers. Positivity is great.
That's right. Everything's great for the Titans. They're 8-3. Mike Vrabel's happy. It's wonderful.
Oh, yes. Let's go back to our text line to that point, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Got a texter that says to you, Joe, Buck is real glad that Joe pissed off Vrabel. You need to start your questions off with, are you in a better mood today, tomorrow, when you speak to Vrabel?
Oh, that's a great idea. Well, thanks for that advice.
That'll go well.
Just look at him and be like, hey, so are you in a better mood today? You going to answer this question I throw out at you?
What did you say earlier, Porth? Pee in his Cheerios. Did someone pee in your Cheerios today or no?
I said whiz, but whiz. Same thing.
Okay, sorry. Is that bad? Is that a no-no?
Not Ken Whizenhunt.
Oh, gosh. I forgot about that guy. I think a lot of Titans fans would love to forget about that guy.
Talk about a coach that got ornery.
Oh, man.
Once or twice.
And he had, like, he had the teams to be ornery about, right?
Like, I would much rather, even though, like, dealing with Vrabel in a press conference, it's not great. I would much rather deal with Vrabel than Ken Whisenhunt. 1,000 times out of 1,000.
I have not heard a positive thing from anyone about Ken Whisenhunt's time here. Like not one thing.
I don't think you will hear one.
There will be many positive things to be said about Mike Vrabel's tenure when he's done. I can't wait to say them and write them.
I'm sure you can't.
Although everything sucks.
Well, except when he sucks.
Yeah.
You one suck. Week we're going to stink, and this guy sucks, and then I suck.
Let me tell you that. What are you going to do if, like, 2 games from now they run a fake punt and Brett Kern just takes off for, like, a 20-yard sprint?
That's a good question.
You're going to have to bring it up. I promise
you. Well, that will be the question. I promise you that. Yeah. I mean,
would you take credit for that? Like, would that influence? Would you have influenced the Titans' play calling at that point?
Clearly, right?
Maybe, what if they run a double reverse? Then we know.
That would be such an amazing troll job. I think that would, like, Vrabel would be the greatest coach in history if he's taken a troll that far.
What if he did what was the final play in Remember the Titans?
Oh, yeah.
Fake 23 blast with a backside George reverse to, like, Brett Kern?
Like your life depended upon it.
Man.
The annexation of Puerto Rico?
That's right. Hey,
somebody ran that the other day. Who was it?
Yeah, you tweeted about it.
I know, I can't remember.
Was it a college game?
I can't remember.
Yeah, but yeah, it was great. Love that play. There's so many possibilities. I'm just trying to think of my intro tomorrow.
How much are you, like, psyching yourself out right now about what the press conference tomorrow is going to look like? It's on you now. You've got to have a really good question ready to go.
Or I could be like Terry McCormick and, like, hello, 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 hello. Or I could do like Jim Wyatt and be like, hey, Mike.
Hey, Mike.
And then it's like, well, okay, sorry, Joe. Sorry, we can't take it. Okay,
double
move on.
Double reverse. Yeah.
Are you in a better mood today?
There's a lot of ways we could approach this.
Then you could be called Robo Rex.
I have never looked forward to a press conference more than I am looking forward to tomorrow between you and Mike Vrabel. Gosh. I hope they give you 3 questions.
See, no, they will not do that. And bless their hearts for not.
Man.
One per person. Here we go.
That's going to do it for us today here on Robbie and Rex Road. You can join us tomorrow for what could be Joe's last show as he prepares for the press conference with Mike Vrabel. Darren Donick and Chase is coming up next. This is ESPN 102.5, The Game.